organization to take over running it. Christina McKenna said, "Difficult things will happen if they do not make the right choices, and one of those is that the National Health Service is almost ready to collapse." She added, "Excuse me for sounding like a conspiracy theorist, but I have heard so many people say it now. Is this partly a deliberate attempt by the government to run down the National Health Service in order to bring in some kind of organization to run it? I hope that's not what they're doing. What they aren't doing is making the right choices of investing in our public services." It comes as nurses plan to strike for the first time, taking action before Christmas. New figures show 7.1 million people in England were waiting for hospital treatment at the end of September, the highest since records began in August of 2007. When asked about nurses' pay demands, Jeremy Hunt said, "I think we have to recognise a difficult truth, that if we gave everyone inflation-proof pay rises, inflation would stay. We wouldn't bring down inflation, and that's why I'm not pretending there aren't some difficult decisions." The Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, said pay review bodies should work with unions to determine fair but affordable pay rises for nurses. The British newspaper The Daily Mirror has more on the same story. Britain's Chancellor Jeremy Hunt on Sunday, 13th of November, warned we're all going to be paying a bit more tax as he unveils his autumn statement budget. Reports suggest Jeremy Hunt will cut the £150,000 threshold for 45p tax to £125,000 to generate £1.3 billion a year, and cut energy bill support from £60 billion in the current 6 months to just £20 billion in the 6 months afterwards. But healthcare leaders have demanded extra funds for the National Health Service amid record waiting times. Jeremy Hunt told Sky News presenter Sophie Ridge that, "Frankly, this doesn't look like a health service that can find efficiency savings. This looks like a health service that is on the brink of collapse." The top Tory, a former health secretary and former chairman of the Commons Health Select Committee, replied, "There are massive pressures in the NHS." He said, "Obviously, it's something I know very well from previous jobs I've done, and I think that doctors, nurses on the front line are frankly under unbearable pressure. So I do recognise the picture that you say." NHS England figures showed a record 43,792 people waited longer than 12 hours in October, from a decision to admit to actually being admitted to a ward. These trolley waits were up a staggering 34% from 32,776 in September, the highest since records began in 2010. Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said public services are already on their knees. 7 million people are waiting for a National Health Service operation or support. It came as Chancellor Jeremy Hunt admitted he will be a Scrooge in this autumn statement on Thursday with no rabbits out of the hat. He refused to deny it would mark a return to austerity, replying, "There will be difficult decisions and we will be asking everyone for sacrifices." Jeremy Hunt warned he won't be offering motherhood and apple pie or cakeism, an accusation he laid at Boris Johnson's door. The Chancellor is eyeing up £33 billion a year of spending cuts and £21 billion a year of tax rises by 2027 in a bid to balance the books. Echoing George Osborne's austerity rhetoric, he tried to claim the nation's finances were like a family budget, despite the £2.4 trillion national debt. Jeremy Hunt told the BBC, "We're going to see everyone paying more tax. We're going to see spending cuts." Sky News has also covered the same story. The Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, has said it's a badge of shame that nurses are staging their first ever nationwide strike in England, but also refused to commit to a 17% pay rise. Rachel Reeves said, "I'm not going to pluck numbers out of the air, and it's up to the pay review bodies to work with the unions, despite the fact that the pay review bodies have already reported back, and it's up to the government." Rachel Reeves added, "I don't believe that austerity 2.0, after the austerity that we've gone through for the last 12 years, is the right approach." She said she would close tax loops on big global multinationals to bring in an extra £7 billion a year. She also repeated the Labour Party's pledge to levy a 45% capital gains tax on private equity fund managers instead of the current 28%. British nurses have voted for the first time to go on industrial action before Christmas, as increase in the inflation rate has plunged many Britons into dire economic straits. Union officials say nurses in large swathes of the country working in England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland voted for industrial action after strike ballots were recommended to 300,000 union members and members of the Royal College of Nursing. The Royal College of Nursing is due to unveil the final results of its ballot in the next few days as counting continues. The union said its members have faced a decade of real terms pay cuts, and it is campaigning for a pay rise of 5% above the rate of inflation, which currently stands at a record high of 10%. An analysis by the Nuffield Trust published earlier this year reported 1 in 9 nurses had quit the British National Health Service, NHS, by June of 2022, marking more than 46,000 nursing, midwifery and health visitor vacancies in the NHS in England alone.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Friday, French President Emmanuel Macron held a meeting with a number of US-based anti-Iran figures at the Élysée. Among them, Masih Alinejad, who has for years led an anti-Iran campaign from the US. In the meeting, Macron described the recent riots in Iran as a revolution. Tehran strongly condemned the meeting, with the foreign ministry slamming it as a flagrant violation of France's international responsibilities in the fight against terrorism and violence. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani dismissed Macron's praise for an anti-Iran activist as regrettable and shameful. Kanani said it's surprising that the president of a country that advocates freedom would degrade himself by meeting a dissident who has tried to spread hatred and carry out violent and terrorist acts both inside Iran and against Iran's diplomatic missions abroad. Western media tried to portray Masih Alinejad as an activist. Reviewing Alinejad's social media posts, one would notice that much of her online activity revolves around the campaign through which she calls on her followers inside Iran to go on the streets, do something to provoke a reaction, record it, and then send the video file to her for online posting. She calls the campaign "My Camera is My Weapon," a campaign hoping to achieve polarization, confrontation, and hatred in Iranian society. She's on the U.S. government payroll. Between 2015 and 2022, the U.S. Agency for Global Media paid Ali Nejad over $628,000 to use her show to push Iranian women into challenging Iranian laws, while also demanding more sanctions against her country. She has been living in the U.S. for the past decade, working as a full-timer for Voice of America Persian, a media outlet directly funded by the U.S. government, made to capitalize on harmful narratives in favor of Washington's interests. It is interesting but not surprising to see Ali Nejad being hosted in Élysée Palace by French President Macron, who supported a law in his own country to criminalize the filming and dissemination of images showing the face or other identifying characteristics of a member of the National Police, the so-called Global Security Law, with imprisonment of up to 1 year and a fine of up to €45,000 for the offenders. The meeting with Macron was not the first of its kind. In 2019, Ali Nejad met Mike Pompeo, then U.S. Secretary of State, a hawkish politician with this mindset.
I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's, it was like, we had entire training courses.
In 2018, Ali Nejad also joyfully met Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, whose hawkish mindset saw the U.S. sanctions killing of 500,000 Iraqi children as a price worth it.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
Albright died earlier this year, but the brutal imperialist mindset is still alive and kicking, with the likes of Ali Nejad advocating for more economic terrorism. The organizer of the meeting between Ali Nejad and Macron is the New York-based Justice for Kurds group. The co-founders of this organization are Thomas S. Kaplan and Bernard Henry Levy. In Justice for Kurds, they are pursuing the goal of forming the state of Kurdistan, which is the result of the division of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. Levy and Kaplan are both linked to the American hawkish group United Against Nuclear Iran, which pressured pharmaceutical firms to stop selling drugs to Iran amid a massive coronavirus outbreak in the country. Levy is a member, while Kaplan is one of the main funders of the group. Levy and Kaplan have lobbied for the interests of Saudi Arabia and the UAE to sanction Iran. Also, in 2019, a report revealed that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates had paid over $35 million to the UANI and its sister organization, the Counter-Extremism Project, over 2 years. In addition to Kaplan, Sheldon Adelson is one of the top donors to UANI. Reports show that Kaplan and Adelson accounted for over three-quarters of the group's total revenue for 2013. The UANI is one of the organizations that Tehran imposed sanctions on in late October for committing human rights violations, interfering in Iran's internal affairs, instigating violence and riots in the country, encouraging acts of terror, countering Tehran's moves and attempts to fight terrorism, and mounting pressure on the Iranian nation amounting to economic terrorism.
Bahrain has held its general elections. The regime was delighted. Authorities in the Sunni-ruled state, which crushed a 2011 anti-government uprising, said that the vote was free and put the turnout at 73%. But the vote was anything but free and fair. Rights groups called the voting environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. They said there were highly restrictive measures that barred members of banned opposition groups. They added, holding this general election will not address the atmosphere of repression and the denial of human rights that has gripped Bahrain for years. This, in essence, would make the vote a sham, that it would be void of holding any value. It was no surprise that Bahrainis took to the streets to protest the electoral process and announced that they would boycott the election, since it served the political trajectory of the ruling class. Bahrain experienced an uprising in 2011, still ongoing till this day, in which the Bahraini regime dissolved the main opposition groups and cracked down on dissent. The regime's crackdown over the past 12 years has been brutal. According to a 61-page report, the court is satisfied with the confession. Bahrain death sentences follow torture, sham trials. The regime has arbitrarily arrested more than 20,000 and tortured more than 6,000 victims. This also includes extrajudicial killings of more than 200 and political death sentences, the dissolution of opposition political societies, and the demolition of 38 mosques. And this is happening in a Persian Gulf country that is a key ally of the U.S. in the region, home to the U.S.'s Navy's 5th Fleet, and also the United Kingdom, which opened a permanent military base in 2018. The powerful Shia cleric Shaghis al-Qassam has said that the election means normalization. He said the elections constitute a test of the populace's awareness, explaining that to elect means opening the door for Bahraini citizenship-bearing Israelis to vote for parliament members. This would translate into how the electorate, meaning soldiers, dual citizens, security forces, those with personal interests in mind, and normalization advocates, would create a parliament for the government and not the people. The double standard approach by the UK and the US stands out when it comes to the issue of human rights and Bahrain. After all, Bahraini courts have convicted and sentenced defendants to death following manifestly unfair trials, based solely or primarily on confessions, allegedly coerced through torture and ill-treatment. The governments of the US and the UK, as well as the European Union and its member states, should urge Bahrain, through both public and diplomatic channels, to halt all executions and to seriously investigate torture allegations and violations of the right to a fair trial. Yet they have chosen to do that with other countries, for example, Iran, which ironically has rioters out on the streets, endangering Iran's national security. According to Iran's intelligence minister, both the US and the UK even have a hand in the deadly protests, like to the CIA. A recent visit of the Pope to Bahrain posed an opportunity for the plight of Bahrainis to be addressed. 130 human rights organizations appealed to the Pope of the Vatican to demand the release of prisoners of conscience in Bahrain. They asked them to adopt an initiative urging the Bahraini authorities to end violations. But those hopes are dim. These 130 human rights organizations have cited how so many Bahrainis have faced discrimination, jail time, and torture. Yet Bahrain has always shifted the blame to Iran for the unrest. Could 130 human rights organizations be wrong, or for them to be lying? But Bahrain ultimately cannot have a democratic process because its big brother Saudi Arabia, which is just a stone's throw away, will be threatened by democracy taking place next door and will vehemently reject this, since it cannot risk having democracy creep into the kingdom. After all, Bahrain is joined only by a causeway to Saudi Arabia.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran. Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the US cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this. The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights. He also added, the US has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere. Perhaps he was referring to the role that the US has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on US's destabilizing acts in the region. The UK's involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups, and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces. And the French capital, Paris, commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring, as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia. And this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced 3 rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. And here are some of the students of Sevier International Schools, Brother Fawad Haider, Brother Hussein Ruhullah and Hassan Nasrullah, and Brother Ali Nasir. Assalamu alaikum jami'an wa rahmatullah, and welcome.
Wa alaikum
assalam. Fine, everyone?
Yes.
That's great. Welcome. Let's recommend our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now to stay with us till the end of this Quranic session, inshallah. So, brothers, let's go, inshallah. Today we will practice verse number 79 of Surah Al-Baqarah. I really recommend you get your Quran, brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now. Inshallah, turn to Surah Al-Baqarah, page number
12,
and ayah number 79. So, once everyone, let's listen to this ayah.
فَوَيْلٌ لِلَّذِينَ يَكْتُبُونَ الْكِتَابَ بِأَيْدِيهِمْ ثُمَّ يَقُولُونَ هَذَا مِنْ
That was great. Now I will be, inshallah, reciting. And make sure you listen and repeat. And brothers and sisters, also please practice with us, inshallah. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
فويل للذين يكتبون الكتاب بأيديهم ثم يقولون هذا من عند الله
فويل للذين يكتبون الكتاب بأيديهم ثم يقولون هذا من عند الله
ثم يقولون هذا من عند الله ليشتروا به ثمنا قليلا
ثم يقولون هذا من عند الله ليشتروا به ثمنا قليلا
فويل لهم مما كتبت أيديهم وويل لهم مما يكسبون
فويل لهم مما كتبت أيديهم وويل لهم مما يكسبون
أحسنت ما شاء الله. Thank you so much. Allah Almighty says in this ayah, so woe to those who write the book with their hands and then say, this is from Allah, that they may sell it for a paltry gain, for a little gain, okay? Little like money or something. So woe to them for what their hands have written, and woe to them for what they earn, what they get from selling the books. So Allah Almighty tells a very important point here, okay? And Allah Almighty is so direct, so serious about it, okay? So strict. Look, Allah Almighty says, to those who write books from their own points of view, okay? I mean their own beliefs, not the true beliefs, okay? It's not the Islamic belief, it's not the truth, okay? They write their own opinions and they relate their opinions to the reality of Islam, all right? And they, for example, write these books and they sell them and they say this book is from Allah Almighty. This is what Islam says. Okay? For example, Islam really values, really respects women. Okay? They write something which is completely against the Islamic sayings, Islamic teachings. Okay? And they publish it by the name of the teachings of
Islam.
Why? Just to make the enemy of the enemies of Islam happy. And the enemies of Islam will pay them something. Pay them a penny. Right? For that little penny, some dollars, they will do this. And they don't know what happens to them in the Day of Judgment. Right? So, Allah Almighty says, woe to them. Wail means, why were them in Persian we say, right? It means their future is clear. Okay? Corrupt. They have no future. So, we really have to be so much careful about, God forbid, we should not publish or release our own ideas and relate them to Islam. It's okay if we understand something, we study Islamic teachings and we get to a position, get to a knowledge, okay, some knowledge, okay, that we can understand and we can say something, okay? Islam has not, like, banned us from expressing our points of view, okay? Islam says do not do the wrong things.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي
قرآني نبض حياتي. How to learn Quran easy. What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
So, thank you. Now we will go to the tajweed rules in this ayah. Make sure you stay with us till the end and listen and practice. فَوَيْلٌ لِلَّذِينَ فَوَيْل وَيْل. This is lean sound, yes? وَيْل أي وَي بَي تَي. We practice this. So فَوَيْلٌ, it's a soft sound. أي فَوَيْلٌ. Lun, this is tanwin dhamma, but we have a lam after it. So tanwin dhamma plus lam. What rule is applied here?
Idgham.
Idgham with ghunna or without ghunna?
Without ghunna.
With ghunna means you stick there, okay, and you kind of stay there for prolong the sound. And also you produce a ghunna sound, nasal sound. But we don't do fawailun, not this sound. فَوَيْلٌ لِلَّذِينَ. Right? Next one. يَكْتُبُونَ الْكِتَابَ. يَكْتُبُونَ الْكِتَابَ بِأَيْدِيهِمْ. ثُمَّ. There's no special rule, okay?
Yeah.
All are easy. ثُمَّ يَقُولُونَ هَذَا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ. مِنْ. Nun sakin plus ayn, throat letters.
Yes.
It's idhar, right?
Yes.
No rule is applied here. Yeah, no rule. Merge, hide, change, no rule. Which one? Which
no
option?
Rule.
No rule. Min, ayn. But here, nun sakin, hiding or ikhfa. Hide the sound of nun a little bit, Hassan, okay? Min, ayn. Look. Min, ayn, dillah. Right, min indillahi. All right, next one. Liyashtaru bihi thamanan qalila. Thamanan tanwin fatha plus qaf.
Ikhfa.
Ikhfa. Qaf. Bad. It's a different ikhfa.
Yeah, heavy. Ikhfa.
Oh yeah, you hide the sound of tanween, but make sure there is, you're telling your listeners, okay, that there's the letter qaf. Alright, Hassan. Thamanan qalila. Alright.
Yes.
Read it.
Thamanan qalila.
Ahsan, thank you. But qaf is also a heavy letter. Qa. Make sure you pronounce it correctly.
Yes.
ثَمَنًا قَلِيلًا. Right? قَلِيلًا. There is صَلَى, or it's pronounced صَلِي as well. Now, what does it mean? What does it indicate? It's a bus station, right?
Yes. Yeah. You should stop here.
We should stop here.
You better can. To stop.
No, you can.
Better to stop.
Yes.
Better not to stop.
Better not to stop. Which one, finally?
You better can. To stop. Better not to stop.
You can
better
stop.
Not to stop.
Or
you can stop.
You can stop. So what's the next option?
Better not.
Or you cannot stop.
No, it says you can stop, but it's better to continue.
Uh-huh.
Wasl, salah. Remember wasl, the letter, the word wasl with it, okay? Wasl means connect. Qala, remember the word waqf here. So, qala, it means you can stop, okay? You can continue. Qala means you can continue, but it's better to stop. Salah means you can stop, but it's better to continue.
What does jim mean?
Jim means there is no priority between stopping, between continuing. You can do any of them. Okay? If you stop, you will not get any reward.
Also,
if you continue, there is no reward.
So somewhere, there is written...
Qaf means stop. It's
no,
better to stop. Ta also means waqf mutlaq. Waqf mutlaq means you can stop here. It's better to stop here. It's like qala, I think. Stop, okay? But in these new prints of the Quran, okay, in the new copies of the Quran that we have, so we don't have those ta, qaf, qif, these things. Okay, we have these normal ones. Jim, Sala, Qala, or Sali, Qali. Then we have, Qif we have, Sin we have, these things. Now, next. So, فَوَيْلٌ لَهُمْ مِمَّا كَتَبَتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَوَيْلٌ لَهُمْ مِمَّا يَكْسِبُونَ So all the memes, you have to produce a nasal sound. مِمَّا, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
That was all about this verse, this ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah, ayah 79. Inshallah. I hope you practice, inshallah, the tajweed rules. And make sure, if you had any questions, you can ask us. So, no questions now.
No,
no. Oh,
thank you so much. Please stay with us. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and Save Your International Schools Network. See you inshallah in the coming sessions. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Iran is the land of saffron, and the red gold has earned the country a fortune throughout the centuries. Now, Iran's city of Torbat Haydariya has hosted a saffron photography festival as a means to introduce the lucrative product to the world. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Like gold, it is weighed in shekels, not in kilos. And that's why saffron is called the red gold, reflecting how precious it is economically. Torbat Haydariya in northeast Iran is the hub of saffron cultivation in the country, producing an average of 20 million tons of the crop each year. Now the city hosts the Festival of Saffron Photography every year to introduce Iran as the land of saffron and how these hard-working farmers produce the strategic crop.
Photographers present in this festival should use their artistry to shed light on different stages of saffron harvest all the way to the final product. Everyone knows Iranian saffron, but perhaps few know how it's produced. So this festival highlights this issue using photography.
Photography is a universal language that needs no translation, so their photos can better introduce this strategic plan to the world from unique angles.
This year, Iran exported roughly 300 tons of saffron, generating more than $350 million in income, according to the data provided by the Ministry of Agriculture. Experts believe Iran could have a much higher share of the global trade of saffron if it pays better attention to branding and marketing of the product.
Due to favorable weather conditions, Iranian saffron is unique in the world. But unfortunately, in many countries, it's smuggled in bulk and is packaged under foreign brands and then sold at higher prices. If we can brand it inside Iran, then we can export it more efficiently.
The young farm owner says his saffron is exported to Europe and the Middle East, despite the restrictions caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran. But more than the U.S. measures, he's concerned about the impact of climate change on saffron cultivation, warning of what he calls saffron immigration from his city, if authorities remain idle.
Unfortunately, saffron is gradually leaving our region and moving to western parts of Iran. This is due to changes in weather conditions and declining rainfall here. If the government helps farmers with modification of planting patterns, we can stop this disaster.
Over the past 2 years, Iran has expanded its cultivation area for saffron to 115,000 hectares, nearly 20 times more than the entire worldwide land dedicated to the crop. While the Iranian red gold is mainly cultivated in the northeastern Khorasan province, other parts of the country, including Khuzestan and Chaharmahal Bakhtiari, are also fertile for saffron farming.
For centuries, saffron has been a key word in Iran's economy, and still is today. Now, Saffron Photography Festival says many know Iran by its red gold, but through the photos shot here, they will get a glimpse of the mesmerizing saffron farms in Iran and how this amazing crop is produced. Yusuf Jalali from the saffron farms in the suburbs of Turbat Haydariye.
Chinese aerobatic teams have been performing jaw-dropping stunts to mark the 73rd anniversary of the People's Liberation Army Air Force. Pilots wowed the audience with their complicated maneuvers, such as swooping close to the ground, making loops and rolls. Aerobatic teams use red, yellow and blue smoke trails representing the flag of the Chinese Air Force. The Hongying aerobatic team, also known as the Red Eagle, is made up of 10 JL-8 trainer planes and 20 pilots from the Air Force Aviation University. The performance was part of China's International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition held in southern China. The exhibit typically draws thousands of participants in the field of aviation from countries all over the world.
Iran has unveiled the new jersey for its national football team for the upcoming 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The new sports attire was showcased during a special ceremony in the capital, Tehran. The event was attended by some of the biggest names in Iran's soccer federation and included a series of entertaining performances. One objective of the ceremony was to see off the national soccer team, who will be making the trip to Qatar in less than a week. The jersey has been created by an Iranian sportswear designer who designed official jerseys for several Iranian sports teams taking part in international competitions. The heavily anticipated World Cup tournament will kick off on the 20th of November. Usually, rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Donna Keane, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center.
Rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design. Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years BC.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lap component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.